a lot of brainstorming on new technology like ADAS, HPC, this kind of discussion really contribute to each other. So that at Link, we are not want to define a spec only for ourselves. We want to contribute to the embedded industry.
On this episode of Embedded Insiders, our EVP and Brand Director, Rich Nass, sits down with Stephen Huang, ADLink Technology President and COO, to discuss the company's recent product innovations. Next, on another Dev Talk with Rich and Vin, the two break down the question, do engineers understand the basics of engineering? But first, Rich recaps to us his recent trip to Taiwan for the 2023 Advantech World Partner Conference. Stay tuned to hear who he met with, what he saw, and what's to come from some of the companies that attended. Here's one hint you probably could have guessed. There's no slowing down when it comes to AI.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Embedded Insiders podcast. I'm Associate Editor Tiara Oliver, joined as always with Ken Briota and Rich Nass. We're going to get into today's podcast with a little recap of Rich's travels, most recent travels.
Sure. Where did
you go, Rich? Yeah.
That sounds like
globetrotting.
Literally, it took me 30 hours to get there and 27 hours to get home, three flights in each direction. Wow. I went from Daytona Beach to Atlanta to Seoul to Taipei. And once you get there, it's great, but getting there, man, it's not fun. But the purpose of the trip was to attend the Advantech World Partner Conference, which they typically hold every other year. But since they were interrupted by COVID, the last one has been in 2018, I think, in China. So this was a pretty big deal. So, and they're celebrating their 40th anniversary at the same time. They're a really big player, bigger than I realized when we got there. And so they have a fairly new, I shouldn't say fairly, a brand new facility that's only been open for a couple months. And it's like four different buildings. Each one is six stories tall, and they do their manufacturing there and their R&D, and they had a giant auditorium where they held a lot of the sessions and a big cafeteria where I hung out and shot a bunch of videos, but it was pretty impressive. But anyway, before I attended that, I spent some time visiting with some of our other friends, people like ADLink and Artilla and Wincom and people like that. So it was very good week. I haven't been to Taiwan in many years. So it was pretty interesting. But the highlights were the time that we spent with Advantech. And they are really doing some really innovative things. And it was AI, and more AI. Generative AI was really what people were talking about.
Yeah. For what purpose? What were they talking about using it with?
They were talking a lot about in the industrial automation robotics realms and how they were using machine vision to generate models to do things.
Yep. Oh, that's cool. So sort of warehousing and inventory for sure, I'm sure. But anything beyond that too, moving into like more sensitive and command and control stuff?
What was very impressive was that they were using their own AI in their own manufacturing facility, which you know.
You got to appreciate when they drink their own juice, you know, when they're, exactly, they're yeah. doing their own thing.
I was trying to think of the PG version of that term, but yeah, that's what they were doing for sure. And it was a pretty automated factory that they actually had an older, on a different floor, they're using the older techniques where most of it's manual. Then they took us to another floor where everything was automated, and there weren't a lot of people there, and stuff was just cranking through. It was pretty impressive.
That's really, really cool. You know, I tell you what, I love those like partner conferences or vendor conferences where it's sort of like everybody's working in the same ecosystem, you end up with a lot of cool, innovative stuff that, because they have this sort of common standard, common basics, that they end up doing some cool collaborative things in those shows.
Yeah, and they had some keynotes by some of their partners. NVIDIA was one of the speakers. Microsoft was one of the speakers. And there was a company called DECA, D-E-K-A. It's actually the company. It's owned by Dean Kamen, if you're not familiar. And they were showing some of the stuff they were doing. Like, they had a security robot who, in the middle of the talk, he wheeled up the aisle and came out in front of everybody and, you know, raised his arms and showed how he can climb stairs and stuff. Pretty cool stuff. And, yeah, you know, but, and that's all pretty advanced AI with machine vision.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it seems like vision is really what everybody's trying to perfect right now in terms of the sort of sensor world for AI. Yeah. So they really want to get vision and it's so hard, but it seems like they're getting close to like actual recognition, which is pretty cool.
It's hard because it's so much data. It's a crazy amount of data when you're doing video.
Well, right. And like, you know, the models don't actually know what they're seeing. They're trying to recognize similar objects. So figuring out how to really differentiate is the real challenge. It's, you know, how do you teach these models to know the difference between a cube-shaped object and a different cube-shaped object?
And a person with a square head, exactly.
Well, sure. I'm personally interested in that.
Yeah, it is hard to do, but it's getting almost to the point where it's a must-have instead of a nice-to-have.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, you know, it seemed like a couple of years ago, the sort of auditory sensing was really, really hot. There were a lot of like smart city stuff happening around smarter, you know, picking up different sounds and things. And now we're into vision. I wonder what'll be the next thing. Is it going to be like touch? What are they going to work on for senses?
I don't have an answer to that, but I think we'll find out pretty quickly. On to the next one. The next trip for both of us is to the world of CES. Yay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I haven't been back to this show in, God, it's been almost 10 years. So I'm excited to see how far things have come since the last time I looked around.
It's very different. And one of the big differences you'll see is automotive takes center stage. And there's so much going on there.
Yeah, which is really interesting because that was definitely not the case last time I went. You know, automotive was present, but most of the automotive stuff was actually part of the SEMA show, not the CES show. So yeah. So it'll be interesting to see that.
Yep. Yeah, I'm excited.
Good segue into the next podcast where maybe we'll have some predictions from you guys as we go into, or as you go into CES. So
as long as you don't go back to the predictions at the end of the year, I'm game.
That's right. Remember, always forget the misses, only remember the hits.
That's right. For sure.
Now, here's Rich with AD Link Technology President and COO Stephen Huang discussing some of the company's upcoming goals and innovations.
Good afternoon. I am Rich Nass, Executive Vice President of Open Systems Media. I lead the embedded and IoT teams for embedded computing design. I am here with Stephen Huang, who is the president of AD Link. How are you doing, Stephen?
Yeah, how are you doing? Yeah, welcome. Welcome to AD Link. Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here in Taiwan. I don't get here that often, so it's wonderful to be able to sit down with you for a little bit. I know you guys are having this event coming up. It has to do with the Edge Open Consortium. Before we get into the event, would you explain to me what the role is of the consortium?
Yeah, okay. Because after COVID, we did not see our partner and the customer very often. So, you know, we want to invite our key customer partner to join the event. So I think the goal is quite simple. We strengthen our relationship with all the partners. And, you know, we want to showcase our new product, new technologies, what we can offer, what we can contribute to the Edge Open Consortium, mm-hmm. yeah, and showcase. We have a lot of demo of our new product, new technology. And you know, most importantly, not just AD-Link present ourselves. We want to gather our important partner from AUO, from Intel. Also, they present their new technology to our key partner so that everybody can brainstorm in. And you, also we have the partner, system integrator, yeah, from worldwide. They can share our brilliant idea each other for because everybody understand in the future AI, 5G, IoT is a key driver for the embedded industry. Mm-hmm. So that in this way, I think everybody can sit down and figure out what is the best way, what is the best approach, so that we can move our business forward. Yeah, this is the goal. Yeah.
So why do you think there's a need for a consortium like this?
Yeah. AD-Link, definitely. We want to strengthen our partnership, but on the other hand, as you can see, our partner also contribute. So that, you know, in a lot of brainstorming on new technology like ADAS or mm-hmm. Com HPC, this kind of discussion really contribute to each other. Yeah. So that AD-Link, we are not want to define a spec mm-hmm. only for ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, we want to contribute to the embedded industry. I think this is it.
Okay. Yeah. And how does this fit in with the future plans for AD-Link?
Oh, very, very important. Yeah. So maybe this time is a tryout and is a prototype. But next up, I think in the next few years, we are going to hold this event not only in Taiwan, Taipei. We want to go to United States, Europe to hold this kind of Edge Open Consortium. Yeah.
Very good, very good. What about the bigger plans for AD-Link outside of the consortium activity?
Yeah, AD-Link, I think the goal is that we want to be a significant player in the embedded controller. And that, you know, we define ourselves. We have six very important vertical market in the embedded industry. We want to explore, we want to go, and we want to grow our business. In the next few years. Yeah.
So what are those six?
Okay. So the most important one for AD-Link, no doubt, AD-Link have been almost 30 years. We started our business from automation, measurement, this kind of business. And because we have some acquisition in the past few years, so I think in medical, mm-hmm. We also see position ourselves in medical is also an important one. And the gaming retail is an important one. And because we have Compay PCI, this kind of VPS, this kind of product, I think military also a very mm-hmm. important one. And then NetAndCom, mm-hmm. because we have ATCA, we joined the ATCA, PCI, PHMJC, NetAndCom also an important one. And the final one, a lot of transportation and railway, this kind of, this is six industries, our
very
focus. Yeah.
And where does AI fit into that big picture?
Yeah, so now the business become very dynamic worldwide.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of challenge externally, internally. Yeah, so I think in the future, there is no single strategy can fit in all the vertical mm-hmm. or region. Yeah, so maybe I need to explain my strategy by region, by vertical.
Okay,
differently. Yeah,
sure.
Okay, so. Starting from United States, okay? So right. Richard come from United States.
I do.
We define and we position United States is one of very important and a very growing market mm-hmm. in next few years. You know, we do see a lot of new investment from the gaming industry, casino mm-hmm. and the medical right. And a lot of networking business happening right now in United States. So United States, I think AD-Link is doing okay. Yeah, and we definitely join force with our key partner like Intel, mm-hmm. NVIDIA,
right?
In United States to grow market. Secondly, I think Europe, despite they are suffering two wars currently, mm-hmm. but we still think Europe is quite important for us. For example, AD-Link try some new edge AI solution business. In Europe, important customer or this is a farmer or pharmacy chain drugstore. Mm-hmm. We introduce a AI solution in Europe. So in this way, I think we can significantly lower the labor cost, improve the efficiency, these kind of things. Yeah, and we also have major partner in major country in Europe, and definitely, as you can see, 2024, Paris Olympic is an important event. So there's a lot of construction on railway, on the retail, this kind of event really will contribute to our business. So United States and Europe and Asia Pacific, but next up, I think it's a challenge one, China. China, we're growing maybe 15th consecutive year, but this year, this is the first year, we will see some drop.
Really?
Yeah. So, so definitely we need to try some new strategy from China. So, but in China, I think the major investment will be, in the past, 5G telecom is booming, but now, currently, they shift a little bit to electric vehicle, semiconductor, this kind of things. So we need to fine tune our strategy to adapt to all the challenge. And then Asia Pacific, because the China is so close, so Korea, Taiwan, and Singapore all got affected. But anyway, we still see some new emerging and growing market. So that's why AD-Link, we began to invest on Southeast Asia, and we will open a new branch office in India.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, we see India will grow in.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, now you ready for the hard one?
Okay.
There's a lot of people who do what you do. There's a lot of competition.
Yeah.
What makes AD-Link better and different?
Okay, so I don't expect you give me a hard one. But AD-Link, yeah, only two things. Innovation and the marketing. We see this is a differentiation. Yeah. So in terms of innovation, we starting from this kind of ball business, module business, and we migrate a little bit to system business. But moving forward, I think AD-Link want to drive this business forward. So the innovation is that we are going to try to solution business. What kind of solution? Yeah, because of 5G, I talked about 5G. So AD-Link already strongly promote private 5G solution as a kit, solution kit. Yeah, for factory, for hospital, this kind of mission critical environment. And then AD-Link also not only sell the motion controllable controller only, we develop AMR, autonomous mobile robots, and together with a cobot, so that we can provide more kind of solution business to the industry, like semiconductor or factory. And then we do have this kind of neon camera, which is very good for edge AI vision solution. So this is innovation, kind of innovation we want to differentiate ourselves with competition.
Okay.
Then the marketing. Yeah, like you said, the reason why you're here is because we want to hold this kind of edge consortium event. So we want to go to market worldwide with our partner, and we want to be closer to our customer and channel partner, yeah, so that we can provide more local service. Yeah.
Sounds like a great strategy.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Stefan.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Yeah.
Now, here's DevTalk with Rich and Vin, where they're discussing the question, do engineers understand the basics of engineering?
Welcome to this edition of Dev Talk with Rich and Vin. I am Rich Nass. I am the Executive Vice President of Open Systems Media. I lead the team for embedded computing design. And with me is Vin D'Agostino. How are you doing, Vin?
Good, Rich. How are you?
Good. So I had that long title. What do we use for a title for you?
Oh, I don't know. Vaudevillian plate spinner, I was thinking I would change my business card to, because I'm always trying to keep everything up in the air moving. But, engineer, so
What percentage technology of our audience knows what vaudeville is?
Oh, probably a very small percentage, but a lot of them will also Google it. Actually, most of them will chat GPT it, which will be 1,000 times the amount of energy for the same information.
Ask your dad.
Yeah, ask your dad. Exactly.
Anyway.
Oh, God.
So interesting subject this week, and I know I didn't prepare you, so we'll see how this goes. I was talking to one of the vendors the other day about topics for white papers, and we were going through all the list of topics, things we should do, and AI is very much in vogue, and we always talk about security and 5G and stuff like that. And one of the things that we talked about was we make a lot of assumptions when we deal with our audience, and we assume that they know stuff. And it sort of shed a light for me when I look at things that are the most popular content on embedded computing design. Most of the time, it's things that are 101 type stuff, the basics of X. And I always wondered whether it's somebody who's not a traditional embedded developer who's reading that stuff, or is it a traditional embedded developer who just wants some background on stuff? So I know you deal with these people all the time. Should we not be making assumptions that people know as much as we think they know? Or is it that they're just looking for, like, they want to get their ideas validated?
You know, it's a great question, and it's actually something that I work with all the time. You know that I'm teaching at university embedded systems, an intro to embedded systems, but I also do a lot of speaking, and I do a lot of e-learning stuff for my clients that are customer facing. And you can never assume, once people are in the wild, you can never assume what they bring to your seminar, your conference, your little teaching. What information they're bringing with it. When you are in the school system, there is an assumed amount of knowledge at the beginning of each scholastic year. And so everyone assumes this base knowledge and you can build on it. But when you are assembling a group of people that have different backgrounds, they're all going to know different things. And, you know, you and I grew up through the MCU, MPU development age. And so I don't, you're a little younger than I am, but I still remember at the beginning having to hand assemble things on a piece of paper and then look up the opcodes and put the hex codes down and then type them in by hand because it was that early on in its infancy, right? And now, of course, we have very rich tools to help us do all of that. And we're developing in high level languages. But someone who grew up through that,
that you just talked about is so important. That to really understand, and I'm doing air quotes if you're on the podcast version, to understand what is happening in the background.
It's, yeah, you know, I in my first class every semester, I say the same few things, which is that firmware is different from software development for two reasons. One, you need to really understand the hardware underneath it, where if you're writing software to a desktop or a server, there's an API layer and all that stuff underneath it is handled for you. But also you have limited resources. I joke that software engineers think they have unlimited resources and firmware engineers are much smarter than that, right? We know that the code has to fit in a certain amount of space. We know that the data needs to fit in a certain amount of space. We know that there's a concept of time because a lot of the things that we're doing are real time. And if, you know, a query comes back a half a second later, nothing breaks. But if you commutate a motor a few milliseconds late, you lose efficiency. You could blow up transistors. There's lots of things. So the whole concept of these things that are different in firmware engineering than in software engineering is so important. And I have a lot of people who come to my classes at Santa Clara and even the summer workshops I do at Stevens who have a software background are trying to understand the hardware more. I have a hardware background and try to understand the software part of it more. So
bring us really back up to where we started, though, because I think you're actually not making my argument of talking about people who are from a different discipline who are coming in and looking for this basic stuff rather than people who are already planted there.
On one level, I would tell you that the hardware and the software are two different disciplines that meet at the firmware level to some extent. But I've had people that were mechatronics or mechanical engineering people in class that need to learn both. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was having a discussion just the other day. I was with someone who does branding for a living and we were talking about some stuff. And I said, you know, when you go to engineering school, people think you learn engineering. Now you got me doing the air quotes. But you know, engineering isn't a thing. When you go to engineering school, you learn a set of problem solving skills, you learn a language, and you learn some troubleshooting skills in your area of expertise to notice and build intuition when something is not right. And so to move from one engineering discipline to another, in theory, you need some understanding of the system so you can build some troubleshooting intuition, and you need to learn the new language. And because the problem solving skills are roughly the same. The problems are different, but the way you approach getting data, sorting through the data, figuring out what needs to happen, what your expectations are, and why what's happening is falling short, those are all sort of general engineering skills that will translate from mechanical to electrical to software. And so it when you are building stuff, which, you know, you guys are putting stuff on the webcast, so it's by definition asynchronous, right? The instructor is not in the room. Even the, I say this all the time, even the least inspired lecturer can tell in the room who's tuned in and who's tuned out and who's getting it and who's not getting it, and can, if they want, alter what or how they present to try to bring everyone together. It's really hard to do remotely. It's impossible to do asynchronously because you're simply not in even a virtual room with them. And so you need to be, you need to walk a line between not boring the people who have a lot of background, because by the time you get to the new stuff, they've tuned out. They've tuned out.
But the stuff we're doing, I'm obviously they have the option of not, they have the option of not looking at what we're posting. If they don't like the article, then they just move on. It isn't like we're forcing them to read this stuff, but they're telling us by their actions that they really do want to see this stuff in big numbers. So going back to the original question, are we making the wrong assumption that people know more than they know?
The answer, I think, is yes. You shouldn't assume that they know all of the background. I mean, we talk all the time in good writing that you don't use an acronym without defining it the first time, and then you can use it, right? In some spaces, people know the acronyms with no trouble. In some spaces, they have no idea. I was taking a digital marketing thing a couple of years ago, and they were talking about avatars, and I'm like, do I have to watch the movie again? Like, what, you know, what am I supposed to know here? What's an avatar in your space? And, you know, asking a lot of people and learning a lot of things, you know, you're in the web space. So, you know, about click-throughs and you know about, you know, all of that stuff. I knew none of that stuff. And they were using all of the three-letter acronyms for all of them. And I had to sit down and learn all of them before I can even make sense of the conversation. And, you know, there was a room where there was an assumption that everyone in the room knew what was going on. And there was at least one.
But to be fair, you were going from a different industry into that industry. And what we're referring to now is people who are in the industry, and we're assuming that they know or don't know.
Well, yeah, but, you know, to some extent, this is all interconnected, right? When I counsel students, I tell them never have lunch with people in your department, have lunch with people outside of the department, because you as an engineer are more valuable to your organization if you understand the implications of the decisions you make as an engineer on the rest of the organization. You make decisions A or B all the time, and A may make it easier to build in manufacturing, B may make it easier to support in the field. And if you don't understand that, to you, it's an arbitrary decision. So I would argue that none of this stuff really exists for an engineer in isolation. And so I would say that there is some sort of remedial work that you need to do when you do it. But I mean, let's say you were talking about AI, right? And you were going to do a whole module on, you know, embedded AI or tiny machine learning 101. You would still have to start with some amount of basics for someone who's coming to AI for small systems.
Yeah, but
with an AI background.
I mean, I'm talking about the things that we assume that they know. Basics of resistors. When we post this stuff, we get a lot of people who read these articles. And I would have assumed that they know this stuff. And I'm not talking about AI and, you know, the latest technology. I'm talking about the things that have been around for a long time that they're still telling us that they need to learn.
Yeah, for a lot of people, they come to their engineering not having had the basics because they came out of a need and they just jumped in and they learned what they needed to learn at the time. And a lot of the basics aren't there. You know, I was talking to a young guy about a year ago and he's like, I don't have to go to university because anything I want to learn, I can learn on YouTube. And I said, yes, that's true. Although if you were a YouTube brain surgeon, I wouldn't want you working on me. But what you get out of a university program in theory is a curated delivery of information in the order that lets you build the knowledge to maximize your effectiveness. You want to learn about something, you Google it, you go and learn one thing on YouTube, but you don't have all the background that helps you build the intuition in this thing that you just learned, right? And that's really what the background does. Background and experience helps you draw conclusions about things that you wouldn't have just by having the data. I'm reading an interesting article. I'm reading an interesting book right now that someone gave me the other day. In fact, you might remember Dana Davis from some of the battery conferences. Mm-hmm. We had dinner. We had dinner with her and her husband, and her son sent me a book to read. And it's about genius and what defines genius. And there's a great line at the beginning of the book that says, talented people can hit the target in the right place every time. Geniuses hit targets that nobody else can see, right? Yep. And that's a great line because someone who doesn't have the background can hit a target when they need to now and then, but without the background, they don't even have the talent to hit the target in the same spot every time. And that comes from having the background information and having built intuition in your space. I would not assume that people know any of this stuff, and I would put more and more basic content out there. I'm actually, you and I have talked about this, I'm looking at taking my university class and making it available online as a boot camp because so many people ask me about it. And I've had so many students call me afterwards because they all have my cell number because I'm that kind of professor that annoys all the other professors and said, you know, I use the stuff that you taught in class every day at work. And I had one student call me and say, I just left a job interview. They asked me 11 technical questions. You covered 9 of them in your class. And they were so surprised that I knew any of them because they said most new graduates don't know any of these things. And
well, they got that from reading our content on embedded computing design.
I'm sure they did. It wasn't my class. I, you know, always talk about your content. And so they all go and
I do not give out my cell phone number for what it's worth.
So, but, you know, it's there's a thirst. And it's interesting when you talk about, you know, we were joking earlier about, you know, our audience not knowing what vaudeville was. There is an interest in young graduates now that you and I never, I think, thought about when we graduated. I've had so many students ask me, how do I remain relevant for my career? How do I not become obsolete? When you and I graduated, most things are pretty stable. The equations for electrical engineering were the same for years. The equations for mechanical engineering were the same for years. The chemical reactions and chemical engineering were the same for years. And in comes software and all of the changes, and it's the youngest engineering discipline, and it's changing so quickly. And there is a realization by these students that, you know, even if they're not software engineers, there's an element of what's going on in their working life that's going to be rapidly changing. And how do they remain relevant? I never asked that question as a graduating engineer. I just said, you know, I'm an engineer. I'll be designing circuits the rest of my life or running my own business or whatever it was. But people are concerned about it. And having these basics available by, you know, by you and the website, I think are really important. And
okay. I think we should wrap here. And I think we've answered the question. We do need to keep going back to basics.
And 100%. 100%.
The audience is telling us that. So we should probably listen to the audience. Cool. Thank you, Ben. This was a very educational one. I mean, not just for me, but hopefully for the audience as well. So it's okay to not know.
It's okay to not know, and it's okay to say you don't know, which is even more important, I think.
Yep. All right. Until next time.
Yep.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Embedded Insiders.
For more daily news, videos, and podcasts, visit our website at embeddedcomputing.com.